So we are continuing our theme of this I believe, or the power of, and so we're very glad to have Jerry with us this morning, and we've known Jerry for many years. Jay has known Jerry since kindergarten, since Jerry is born and raised here in Winona. They used to get into a bit of adventure up in the bluffs and on the streets of Winona and running around together. And so without further ado, let's have Jerry.
Good morning. Thank you, Emily, for that kind introduction. Thank you for that kind introduction. Is that better? Okay, thank you. Yeah, I was born here in Winona at the old hospital, if anybody remembers that. I certainly don't. It was gone by the time I was a kid. But I grew up at 212 East 8th Street. 212 is by 8th and Franklin. And it just so happens to be the place where Jay and Emily now live. They bought the old ramshackle house that we grew up in and built a beautiful new home on the site and have welcomed me on many occasions to be there. And as I was reflecting this morning on talking with you, I was able to look out the big picture window in the front, which is not dissimilar to the picture window that we had, but to see the same homes that I grew up with and then think about the people that really influenced my life. And then to see the bluffs in the background was just really a nice time. I grew up here, and I'm the youngest of six, we had kind of a tumultuous childhood, but not bad. I mean, we had a lot of love in the home. I had a father who was alcoholic, and, I had a brother. My oldest brother passed away in a car accident on the interstate bridge here when I was 13 years old. And so, there was a lot of things that were just... it left me wondering. I didn't know how to live life. I didn't, I talk about I didn't get the manual, and apparently a lot of people didn't. But I'm going to back up for just a second because my life has been defined by that event. It's before that and after that. And what happened with that is he had his birthday on Christmas Day, and so every Christmas was kind of a sad occasion, and every holiday actually became a kind of a sad occasion. And one of the things that taught me is how to seal off any feelings at all. I learned how to create a barrier between me and the world in a way that allowed me to survive, really. And that became sort of a theme throughout my life. I'm going to talk a little bit about addiction and my journey in recovery. I am a proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I am not here today to speak on their behalf or on behalf of any other group of people. I'm here for myself and talking about my own experiences. As I mentioned, I had sort of this tumultuous life, and I also had a beautiful life. I was married for 28 years. I have three grown children, three grandchildren, as Emily said. But it was often hard for me to really take stock in all the blessings that I had in my life. I always felt like there was something kind of missing. And as I said, I didn't have the manual, so I didn't have something to refer to. And so I spent so much of my life trying to piece together a way to live in peace with myself and with the people around me. But what I kind of found is that I created that coat of armor that only allowed me to get so close to people. And so I mistook in my life having a lot of acquaintances and a lot of friends with having intimate relationships, and that really wasn't the truth. I only let people in so far. Over the years, I started using drugs and alcohol at a very young age here in Winona. Thank you very much for giving me those gifts. And they are at this, you know, I actually do consider that to be a gift now, because it is the thing that propelled me to change my life. You know, like many people that suffer from addiction, you know, I got to a point in my life where I was restless, irritable, and discontent, and that's a phrase right out of some of our literature in the program. And in this constant striving and seeking to overcome that, I was always thinking about myself, and in not in a way of thinking, you know, being proud or being you know, something that I wasn't, but always trying to figure things out. I was pretty successful in business, and one of the things that made me successful is I'm pretty creative, and I can think outside the box, and I can find solutions to things. You know, I don't live in a black and white world. I live very much in a gray world, so I can you know, have pretty sound critical thinking. And so, as I try to fix myself over the years, none of that worked for me. I couldn't figure out, you know, the key to this thing. And you know, what I found myself doing is this repeating pattern of, you know, if I move to Yellowstone, which I did for a couple years, and, you know, then I'll be happy, then I'll find some fulfillment. And then it was, you know, if I get married, you know, that'll be the thing that fills up this kind of emptiness that I had inside. Having children, you know, getting the job of my dreams, which I had for many years, and had a lot of opportunity with that. All these things were like, I was really trying to get to the end, because I figured if this happened, then I would be happy. Or if I accomplished X, then I was worthy of, you know, filling the skin. So, you know, my life did devolve quite rapidly. In the course of a few years, I lost my mother, and I lost my job, and I lost my marriage. And I'm happy to report, by the way, that my ex and I are really good friends. We do a lot of things together. We got to go to England together a couple years ago, and we spend a lot of time together with our grandchildren. So that's, you know, that's a gift that having found recovery has given me. And so I'm talking about my journey a little bit in recovery. And the first thing that we are kind of taught is we have to ask for help. We have to be willing to tell ourselves that we can't do this on our own. And for people like me, that's a hard pill to swallow, because, you know, I really bulldozed my way through life and was able to, you know, accomplish the things that I thought would, you know, make me fulfilled and happy. And then, you know, asking for help, and then the real trick is accepting that help. You know, I always felt like I was the fixer and the helper and the, you know, person that was going to make everybody else happy and whole. But to be able to, you know, ask somebody, how do I live? How do I get out of this constant turmoil that I feel inside, this emptiness sometimes? That was a real eye-opener for me. One of the other things that we talk about in recovery is coming to believe in something greater than ourselves. And I hear a lot of those kind of themes today through the, you know, some of the songs and some of the shares that I've already heard. And for me, that's been a really a powerful journey. And, you know, I've come away, and I'll talk a little bit more about this, but I've come away understanding that, you know, the concept of the God that I grew up with was great, but I find that there's so much more in the living of life and the living in community. So spirituality, you know, the power greater than ourselves, you know, one of the things that I find is that when people talk about that, I get really uncomfortable. It kind of makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. You know, I always think that people are preaching and that they're telling me that I should follow them or I should follow a certain dogma. And I always resisted that. And over time, what I've done is I've kind of turned that to be where instead of being a subtractive God, I have now for myself an additive God. So you can tell me about your experience and about your beliefs, and rather than try to debate them or, you know, I just add that to my spiritual, my spiritual box. I call it my spiritual bucket. And what that's allowed me to do is to be a lot more patient and to be and to grow in this understanding of what I believe is a power greater than myself, to be so inclusive of so many things, you know, large and small. And, you know, part of it is an opening of the mind and saying, hey, I don't know the answers. And, you know, I'm not going to find those answers on my own. So listen to what people have to say. So then we go through a process of soul searching. We call it taking an inventory. But it's a process whereby we get really honest with ourselves and talk about things that we've done, how we've felt, and what the patterns were in our life that were keeping us, you know, in that area, in that feeling of restlessness and irritability and discontent, and then sharing that with people. In our case, we do that with what we always say with our God of our understanding, as well as another person, and what that allows me to do is figure out what the things I'm repeating in my life that are not helping. You know, trying to control everything, for example, giving up some level of control and allowing life to unfold instead of trying to corral it into a certain way of looking at life that, once we identify those areas, then we work on that. And we find, we're still looking, we're asking for help or saying, I'm struggling with this. How do I fix that, and how do I get by that? And what I've learned is that by looking at other people and trying to see what is successful in their lives, I try to model that behavior. And instead of trying to think my way through it and trying to problem solve it, I am able to see what other people are doing and use that as my teaching and as my learning. And this happened to me in my late 50s, by the way, and so it was quite a shift in my my entire approach to life. The next step that we do is we make amends to people, and this was a real eye opener for me. Amends is the process by which we talk to people and tell them what we have done and how we think that we might have hurt them. Maybe cheated them out of something, stolen, whatever the case may be, and asking what we can do to make it right, and I think, like a lot of people, I always thought of amends as an apology, and what I've learned is it's not an apology, it's a settling of a bill that I owe, and I am not doing it necessarily for the person that I'm making an amends to, it's really for myself, it's to come clean, to be honest, and to be able to start each day from a place of, neutrality or serenity is, one of the things that we strive for. These are all driven by different principles of honesty, humility, kindness, and that's what my approach now is to try to be as good a person as I can be today and really be more interested in other people than trying to tell them about myself. Hard for me to do because I like to talk. I'm a chatter, but what I find is if I can listen twice as much as I talk, life gets a lot better. And some people really need to be able to talk, and for me to be able to listen is actually doing them a service because they're able to process different things for themselves. And each day, what I try to do is, and this is it, in recovery, it's considered the 10th step. It's really taking an assessment of each day and saying, what did I do right? What did I do wrong? How can I be better? Do I need to make an amends to anybody? That sort of thing. And, to try to start each day or end each day in a place of, peace within myself. And the last tenet that we talk about is helping others. And, you know, I don't know if it's because of, you know, growing up in a Catholic church and, you know, thinking about confession and then having our penance to make, but to me, helping others always felt like a penance. It was kind of something that I had to do for all the bad things that I did or my bad thoughts or whatever, you know. And the other thing I always thought about helping other people is, you know, if I can help you twice, then when you help me once, I don't owe you anything. You know, it always let me kind of be on top of the, it was kind of a chit system, you know, the, and what I found through going through this program and, you know, learning about myself and learning about my spirituality and accepting help from other people is that when I help other people, I'm not in my own head. I'm thinking about them. And that's really become a key for me, is to think about other people. Because when I sit and think about myself all the time, and that's where I get back to that place of just, you know, of being uncomfortable and feeling not so great. So a plug for helping others. And I love that you're doing that with the family, the Venezuelan family, as well as some of the other organizations that were talked about earlier today, because that's, you know, looking for those opportunities to help. And, you know, sometimes the world feels really overwhelming, and I, you know, disagree with a whole lot of things that are going on. And I heard this on a podcast a while back. Joan Baez was being interviewed by Nicole Wallace, who is a commentator on MS Now. And they were saying this, you know, what do you do when it becomes, everything becomes so big? It, you know, it's, how do you even approach trying to fix things or change things? And Joan Baez said that she looks at the world as like the ocean, and that you can't really change the tide. The tide's going to come in and come out no matter what you do every day. But you can make life better for the fish. You know, you can, you know, so it's kind of nibbling off at those small things and, you know, a random act of kindness. You know, it's helping somebody, opening a door, giving a smile, and some of the things that we've heard already today. And it's a lot of, it's all those little things that change, not so much, well, it helps change the world, but it also changes yourself. Or for myself, it changed me, because I'm so much more at peace when I'm not trying to manage, you know, we call it impression management, you know, where I'm trying to impress upon you who I am, and I want you to think of me in a certain way. When I get away from that, that's where the space is for me to be part of a community. And that's become really an important part of how I live my life today. So there are a couple things that I've learned along the way, and, you know, what we always joke about is saying that if anything here makes sense, or if it sounds really smart, it's probably something that I did not think up myself. If it sounds dumb and you disagree with it, it's probably something that I did come up with myself. But one of the first things is, and this was a line from a book that I read, and it says that, you know, we can't think our way into right living, but we can live our way into right thinking. And so, you know, the action, the thought is followed by the action instead of the action being, you know, through the thought. And that really resonates with me, because, you know, I do a lot of things just, I was taught structure and habit, you know, good habits. And if I follow those things, you know, and I emulate what I like in other people and what I want for myself, then, you know, life goes along pretty well. I've also learned to, you know, we say not to think of myself, not to think less of myself, but to think of myself less. And, you know, and when, you know, when I'm in community, when I'm helping others, and I do sponsor people and in the program that I'm in. And that time spent is time that I'm not in my head, and it literally gives me a degree of peace, and you know, makes me feel better. You know, I've got a friend that always says, you know, why did Mother Teresa do what she did? And it wasn't out of you know, necessarily a sense of duty, or you know, it made her feel good. And, you know, when we help others, we feel good. And, you know, isn't that kind of what we want to do? We want to feel at peace with ourselves, or at least I do. And so the other thing that we talk about a lot is acceptance. You know, there's a lot of things I disagree with. And when they told me I have to accept those things that I don't control, I kind of didn't like that, because I wanted to be able to fix things and change things. But I was taught that acceptance doesn't mean that I like it or even that I agree with it. Acceptance just means that I don't control it and that I can't necessarily change it, at least not in one fell swoop, but I can do those small, I can fix those fish in the ocean. And that's got to be enough, you know, for me. Another thing that I learned was in order to attract the people that I want in my life, I have to become the person that I want to attract. And I love that, because if I can be kind and if I can be helpful, you know, I was pretty self-absorbed for many years, and, you know, and I think about that and I'm like, you know, would I want to attract somebody who's always thinking of themselves? Well, no, not really. Do I want to attract somebody high maintenance? Not really. You know, all the things that I really found in myself were not attributes that I would ascribe to somebody that I want to attract. And whether that's in community or in personal relationship or in work. And that's really helped me a great deal, becoming the person I want to attract. The other thing I learned is living in connection. You know, even sitting here today, and I'm, you know, a little bit nervous about talking to a group of people that I've never met before, and you know, but I'm sitting in community. It's, you know, this kind of combined spirit of all of you that really gives me sort of a sense of belonging. And that's really an important part of, you know, what's happened to me through recovery and through really going through this journey in the latter part of my life, where I, you know, I really am very contented as a person, and I never had been growing up. One of the other things is learning to not get what I want, or, you know, not having what I want, but wanting what I have. You know, it's kind of these juxtapositions. It's, you know, and I do oftentimes think, oh, I wish I would have done something differently before, you know, not behaved in a certain way, not spent money the way I did. And, you know, or I think in the, you know, I think off in the future, you know, is my Social Security going to sustain me? You know, I worry about all that stuff. And, you know, I have to get back to the present. And the best way for me to do that is to think of all the things that I have in my life, you know, my friends, the program that helped me recover, my children, my grandchildren, the roof over my head, you know, all the small things that, and when I do that, I stay much more in the present moment. And that's always been really difficult for me, to stay in the present moment. And by doing that, I've also learned how to meditate. I've gotten to a practice of yoga that really helps a lot. And all of those things are tools for me to get out of self. And then, you know, as I mentioned before about listening, you know, I like to think of it as sort of exponential listening. You know, so if I've got three people, I want to, you know, them to share twice as much as I share. You know, so there's six different opinions, and then I can share two. Not that I'm keeping track, but again, it's that, you know, being more interested in other people than trying to interest people in myself.